dare not disappear?
No, he hit him high, but what else could he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad. But
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome again to the Magic Sponge Podcast, the miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. My name is Brian Seeney. Most of you know me as the guy behind the NRL Physio social media pages. James, my fellow Queenslander, physio co-host, we're back again, mate. How are you?
Going really well, Brian. I'm someone who completely understands Origin as a passionate Queensland supporter like yourself, but I just want to say, hey, is there anything better than a game three decider at Suncorp Stadium? Because those games absolutely bang. And I don't care what anyone says, but that is the pinnacle of the sport. And it was everything and more. It was awesome. How good,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera.
100%, mate. It was one of the best games. I think, you know, everybody said everything about it so far. So we won't turn this into an hour-long podcast about how much we loved the result or loved the game and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, Origin is awesome. We don't need, you know, you don't need players giving each other shit in the media to make the game awesome. It was just awesome in its own right, and long may it continue. Love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, mate. So look, as always, guys, this is your weekly one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. We give our take on the in-game injuries from the round just gone, review the big injury and rehab news from those already in the casualty ward, and talk through the implications of certain injuries on things like recovery time, performance, and even super coach scoring. Look, if you're getting value, from this content, we do heaps more over on patreon.com/NRLphysio. This week we had some stuff on all the Origin injuries, sort of implications for them backing up. We looked at Ruben Garrick, and we'll talk about that later, about what the implications were for him coming off his injury, his performance, his super coach scoring. We have questions on here each week, and those questions only come from patrons. It's only $5 a month for the base rate. Look, heading into, you know, super coach and fantasy finals and stuff like that, it might be the edge that you need. Come along for a month. You can always cancel if you think it's no good. But everybody in there seems to be, we've got a good little community going, and it's a good place to be at the moment. So James, without further ado, let's get stuck into the injuries from round 18.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I mean, I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
Round 18, Brian, was an Origin-affected round in some of these games, with a few guys missing games and sitting. And I guess we'll sort of hit that point in time of the year where people are starting to miss a few games just with sort of accumulated trauma and injuries and those sort of things. So we've got a lot to cover this week. There was a bit of a casualty ward this week, wasn't there, to cover off in these games. But we'll go through it from go to woe. So the first game on the slate there was the Cowboys versus Sharks up at Townsville. They're a good win by the Sharks. Big concern out of this one, who's a very fantasy-relevant player, Sione Katoa with a shoulder concern. Good footage of the injury that you put up there on the social media, Brian. I guess it's sort of difficult at first glance to tell if it was a subluxation or even if we sort of more along that moderate to high-grade AC joint injury. What was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, mate, look, it was an interesting one. Look, it was a bit hard to tell sort of from the get-go whether it was his right or left shoulder, to be perfectly honest. But look, I've been told that it was his right shoulder, which was the shoulder that he kind of landed on, an outstretched arm. As you said, there was a little bit of elbow sort of digging into the ground, so whether that, caused the driving up of the humerus up into the AC joint and caused a little thing there. But I'm leaning towards a subluxation at this stage. I don't think it was a full dislocation because he did, carried on with a bit of a try celebration afterwards as well. It was in the act of scoring a try. So, look, hopefully, look, if it's an AC, you're still looking at, you know, around that 2 to 3 weeks anyway. With a subluxation, most of them are usually back within that 3 week range. But it's no guarantee, as always with these shoulder instability episodes, he still could be, you know, even if it's a subluxation, there can be damage to the labrum, the cartilage, that can cause issues with instability moving forward, so it can leave him at increased risk of, you know, further subluxations, dislocations, that kind of thing. So even if he is back in a couple of weeks, he's just at that increased risk for the rest of the season. So, yeah, look, I like, if I owned him in any of those Supercoach fantasy kind of things, I wouldn't be afraid to move him on if he isn't named for next week for somebody with a bit more upside who's a bit healthier.
Yeah, Matty Cavallo is a fantasy icon of mine and a firm favourite in my teams over the years. So hopefully he gets looking in team lists when they come out next week. We'll flick through the next game, Brian. That was Eels versus Warriors. There wasn't any major concerns that we had of that one, because the Roosters versus Dragons was one that we have a lot of time to spend on here, because there was a few major concerns here. Two first concerns were Tupanua and Billy Smith both having ACL injuries. They're both non-contact injuries. From the footage that you put up on the socials there, it looked like a pretty clear-cut ACL injury for both of those guys there. So that's obviously season over for them and really, really disappointing. The other two people that we'll get you to touch on there is Sione Takiao with an eye socket fracture, about his expected length of time missing, and also Moses Suli with an ankle injury. Give us the wrap of the Roosters Dragons there, Brian.
Yeah, so the two boys obviously just look, as I put in that post, like, crazy, crazy weird to have another two ACLs for the third year in a row for the Chooks in one game. You know, like, it's crazy enough for any team to get multiple ACL injuries sort of three seasons in a row, let alone all in the same game each year. Just really, really strange how that's happening. We'll talk later. There is a really good question about sort of, you know, I guess the broader aspects of these injuries and why they're happening. But specifically for these guys, I mean, Sitili Tupanua, you're not going to see a more obvious ACL injury on video. There was a clear shift of that lower leg, that snap back of the tibia, and then that ripple through the calf. I think it was graphic enough. It was one of the few videos in recent times I've had a bunch of people in my DMs telling me to delete the video, that it was disgusting, that I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing, and all that kind of stuff.
Not safe for work.
Yeah, look, like, it's one of those things, I think. Like, I understand that it's not nice, and what we're talking about are not fun, you know, like, they're not fun injuries a lot of the time for a lot of these guys. But at the end of the day, James, it's, you know, I mean, taking away from the social media side of things, this is our job, right? This is what we do day in, day out. It's looking at these injuries. Understanding how these injuries happen is really, really important for us. And I think it's, like, obviously with the amount of coverage that, you know, my account now has, it's obviously interesting to others as well. Now, some of these injuries can get quite graphic, and I try and put, you know, graphic warnings where I can. But yeah, they're never fun. And I know people are like, oh, you're sick because you know, get off on posting about these serious injuries. I don't enjoy it. I really do enjoy analysing the footage and trying to figure out what's happened, because once again, that's my professional interest. But I certainly don't enjoy it when people suffer significant injuries. So yeah, look, he was a really, really obvious one. Billy Smith, I think the interesting thing there is that, look, this is his third ACL injury, obviously. You know, he's only 22, 23, I think, which is just crazy. The interesting stat there is that if a player or an athlete suffers two ACL injuries before the age of 25, they're about a 30 to 40% risk of suffering a third. And that's in professional athletes too. So unfortunately, Billy Smith is joining, you know, he's part of that statistic now. The risk of a third to a fourth is pretty high as well, unfortunately. So he's got some work to do to stay away from those ACL injuries. The one there, and this is getting technical with you, James, and I had another physio who works for Pitch Ready in my DMs as well, and we were having a bit of a chat about it. But the actual mechanism that I posted up, anyone noticed, but I kind of said, look, the non-contact nature had me worried for ACL, but I mentioned other things like PCL, meniscus as well, because even though it was non-contact in nature, it just didn't have the stereotypical signs of an ACL, in that when he planted his foot to sort of change direction, he planted through his toes, and generally it is a plant through the heel to get that sort of heel strike and force up through the leg that when you get it. And I've since found out, and I kind of was a bit, oh, look, it looks ACL-y, but there are some, you know, elements that probably physically aren't quite there, and since found out that Trent Robertson indicated that he actually had an incident earlier in the game, Billy Smith, that it kind of clicked a little bit. Oh. Yeah, so
yeah, right.
And told the physio about it. They kind of played on through it. And as we've spoken about on here before, because Billy Smith's done his ACL in the past, he's tearing a graft ligament. He's not tearing his, you know, natural ligament. So sometimes that can tear without too much pain, you know, and it can tear and you might think it's like a little meniscus thing or something clicking in knee or something like that. So that's obviously what's happened, or whether he knew it and didn't want to believe it, I'm not really sure. But yeah, I just found that interesting that it happened earlier. And then that incident that I actually posted was, it just gave way again on him as he was trying to change direction. Yeah. So some really tough times ahead for Billy. I think, it's definitely possible to come back from this. I mean, we've had multiple guys on this podcast this year who have come back from three ACL injuries at a young age. Obviously, some of them, you know, went on to suffer fourths and fifths, and hopefully that's not the case for Billy. But, he's had a rough trot. I mean, ACLs, the shoulder reco, Liz Frank, like, it just goes on and on for him, unfortunately. So, yeah, look, we'll talk about the wider Rooster stuff soon. Tauke Aho eye socket fracture. Look, that's one of those ones we spoke about with Campbell Graham. Look, like the worst case, you know, if it's really significant, 6 to 8 weeks. But it did look like he stayed out there for a while. So you're hoping it's one of those standard, just a crack in the eye socket. And if that's the case, they can, you know, guys can be back in 3 to 4 weeks. Moses Sully with the ankle. This is actually, well, like, you know, you say I don't enjoy these things. I did get a chuckle out of this because I went to analyze the footage of the Moses Sully injury, and it was just kind of, it happened in a tackle that they didn't, like, he kept playing on for a little bit. But the one video angle that they showed, they, just as he got tackled, flashed down to obviously the sideline cameras in like ground level, and literally the step that Sully took, that his ankle got, you know, like injured, the touch judge ran straight in front of the camera and just blocked the entire footage. So that's, if you're wondering why I haven't posted anything on Sully, that is why. I'll try and post it on Patreon or something like that, because you couldn't get more, like, just this big wall of yellow in the way just as it happens. It did look like it was like that syndesmosis kind of mechanism where the tackler was coming down from the outside, so potentially he's in a bit of trouble there, because he did come off shortly after. And as we know, those syndesmosis injuries are nasty. But yeah, look, I think the biggest thing is just thoughts go out to Tupanoa and Billy Smith particularly, because they were pretty nasty.
Yeah, echo those ones. And you, like you said about Billy Smith, he's had a terrible run with the injury. And it's just, yeah, you wonder what people, you know, have done from a sort of in their past lives, what sort of injury sort of luck they get on the field. And I think it's just something that's out of people's control a lot of time. It's I think Billy Smith might just be one of those people, unfortunately. But we'll move on to the Seagulls versus the Knights game next, Brian. So in terms of this game, there was one pre-injury or sort of pre-game injury that was a rule out there. That was Bradman Best. He had a thumb ligament injury, and they think he'll be probably 2 to 4 weeks away. He's had a pretty disrupted year as well with injury, actually, Bradman Best, which is a bit of a shame because he's a really up-and-coming player there, and the Knights need everyone they can get at the moment. The other people that will brush over reasonably quickly is obviously Kurt Mann with a cork, so he should be facing a huge amount of time out. Dom Young and Tyson Frizzell both have rib concerns, which we can touch on in a bit more detail. The other one is future Dolphins Hall of Famer and icon Edric Lee, who's going there next year. They're concerned about a foot injury for him, and obviously with his history there, that's a big concern to sort of talk about. And then also Simi Sasangi has a shoulder concern as well. But do you want to speak to the rib injuries firstly for Dom Young and Tyson Frizzell, Brian?
Yeah, mate, as per usual, the old the police injuries, every breath you take, every move you make. I'm sure everyone's sick of hearing me say that, but yeah, ribs suck. They're super painful. You know, if a guy like Tyson Frizzell's coming off, then you know it must be pretty painful. Yeah, look, if it's not fractured, 1 to 3 week return, but there's a risk of that in-game aggravation, all that kind of stuff. I think the thing here, which was interesting, apparently Dom Young was getting like shooting pain in his ribs, and they were wondering whether there was some nerve involvement as well, or even some sort of internal stuff. So that's one to look out for. That can obviously complicate things and extend out that recovery time a little bit. My boy Edric, mate, this makes me very, very sad. So the story with Edric is last year, look, his 2020 season was just a write-off. He had a second metatarsal fracture. I mean, we talked about it when you had him as the Supercoach Corner player of interest. Yeah, look, correct, total write-off. 2020 had that second metatarsal fracture. Second met has a pretty crappy blood supply. It's not all that great. The Knights initially tried to manage it conservatively, got him back running, and then it completely fractured. So had the surgery to sort of pin that back up and stuff like that. It unfortunately, doesn't, you know, completely absolve that area of fracture risk, and it's sounding like that's what they're concerned for again. Look, it's a long time between now and the start of 2023, so there's plenty of time for him to get right for my beloved Dolphins, but it is a big concern sort of moving forward. Multiple fractures, like weakness in that bone. We've spoken about Ray Fatale and Mariner, those kind of guys with navicular concerns. It's just those bones with poor blood supply, they can really, yeah, knock guys around, I think. So I'm a bit concerned about that one, especially as a proud Dolphins man. And Sasungi, I think, looked like a subluxation as well, similar to Katoa. I haven't gone back to have a look at it. I just saw it live, and that's what it looked like. But yeah, my guy Edric, very, very sad.
Yeah, it's a real shame, isn't it? You got to sort of feel for Edric if that's what he's sort of facing there on the sidelines once again. In terms of other things to touch on there, I think that was sort of the wrap from their Seagulls versus the Knights there, Brian. So we'll flick over the Titans and the Broncos because there's no concerns there. The injury concern at the Tigers-Panthers game, and I thought it was quite funny in the presser there that Brett Camorley was saying it was disrespectful that the Panthers rested all those players and the Tigers went on to lose to all those players, but he still found that disrespectful. So go figure there with Noddy, probably not the best form there. But Stefano Utokimanu, we've talked about him earlier in the year with a syndesmosis injury and surgery. He's actually had a scaphoid fracture. So he's been one of the probably bigger disappointments coming off the back of a really strong year last year. So he's facing a bit of time on the sidelines, isn't he, Brian?
Yeah, mate, he's in a bit of trouble. The scaphoid, we just come off talking about Edric Lee with bone with poor blood supply. Scaphoid's worse. So scaphoid's one of the only bones in your hand with really poor blood supply. There's plenty in your foot, but generally bones in the hand heal quite quickly. Scaphoid's just, yeah, the worst one, and it's the one that is quite commonly fractured when you sort of land on an outstretched hand and fracture your wrist. So, yeah, they've said 6 to 8 weeks. We've seen many players in the past get that initial diagnosis and then that recovery time just stretch out and out because the healing isn't as predictable as, you know, it could be normally. So, yeah, look, I'd be shocked if we see him again this year. I think they just shut him down for the year and make sure they get it right. There was already talk, I mean, in amongst all of it, they were going to shut him down to get his foot right with what was going on there. So, yeah, I'd say we've seen the last of him for this year, which was really disappointing because I tipped him for a big year. I think one of my best, boldest calls, I said I thought he'd be a top 5 front rower in Supercoach this year because I just thought he'd kick on from last year, but not to be with all the injury concerns. And yeah, he just hasn't performed all that well off the back of them, unfortunately.
No, sad, isn't it? I think, everyone's a bit let down by that. He's an end of the Blue squad last year, I think, in the external team. So a bit of a shame there. We'll move on to the next game because this is one we need to talk to in a lot of detail, Brian. Storm Raiders, big news out of this one was Ryan Pappenhausen with probable patella fractures, what's been reported in the early stages there. So we might talk about him in a bit more detail, but I'll also just mention quickly that Charles Dukkler-Clockstar had a hamstring aggravation at training, so he's probably spending more time on the sidelines there. Nick Kotrich and Elliot Whitehead had a bit of fluid on his knee, a bit of swelling there, so he's not expected to miss a huge amount of time. Nick Kotrich is a leg infection, so he's not expected to miss time either. Harry Grant was another one in this game that was carrying a glute cork into the game, so I thought, yeah, he's what we want to have a look at because he looks like he was playing a little bit, probably just a little bit injured into that game there to try and get a win for the Storm. But do you want to talk to Ryan Pappenhausen because he's the hot name on everyone's lips at the moment, isn't he?
Oh, mate, what a killer. It's just been a bad week, a really bad week, and this obviously is probably the apex of that bad week. Really, really nasty injury mechanism really traumatic force. Jack Whiten at full speed, just straight into the front of Pappy's knee. Look, an interesting one there. I think the video footage, you see, you can actually see from that posterior view, sort of from behind, you see his calf shudder from the force of the bone. Like, the bone is obviously, that lower leg bone is just shifting so much. And I put in my initial post, like, if he had a PCL in that knee, it would have been gone, like, for sure. But I guess the thing, you know, that a lot of people sort of are probably aware, having followed me, is that he did tear it earlier in the season. So that means moving forward, he plays without a PCL in that knee and just kind of compensates with, you know, strengthening and stuff around it. But I guess what that means without that PCL, if you cop a blow to the front of the knee, you know, it leaves you open to aggravation, but it also leaves you open to, you know, other structures being damaged that wouldn't usually with that kind of thing. Now, I don't think that's contributed all that much to the major concern here, which is that patella fracture. I was actually, when they didn't really show the point of impact all that well, but I was hopeful that it was a bit lower than the kneecap. Initially, but yeah, no, it turns out that it is a kneecap fracture. Then once it becomes a kneecap fracture, then you start to open up, you know, is it just a small crack, you know? And I've had a few people message me saying, how many different types of kneecap fractures could there be? And there's a lot. And that's why the recovery range is so wide. You can have a small little, you know, crack in the kneecap, which, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, immobilize it, that kind of thing. Guys can come back pretty quickly. But you can also have significant kneecap fractures, so kind of where that kneecap is split in two, which it sounds like if this one isn't that, then it's close to that, because he's going to require surgery tomorrow by all accounts. Mate, I'll throw to you, being in hospital. I mean, do you see too many surgical repairs of patella fractures and the different types of surgeries they can do for it? Because I want to talk about sort of the hardware issue that he may, you know, face moving forward.
Yeah, so I guess the common ones probably spring to mind, and generally it's in more elderly population with poor bone density that almost fall directly onto the knee from a standing height would be the one that we see most commonly. And I guess the most frequent surgical procedure that we would sort of see, or approach that we sort of see, is like the tension band sort of wire thing with the figure eight. So that's probably the one that we see the most. And they follow that usually with a period of prolonged immobilization in sort of full knee extension there. So that's usually what we see. A lot of times you can put a little bit of weight through to begin on with, so long as you're not flicking your quad on too hard there. But that's probably the one that we see the most there. What are the other sort of ones that you're aware of from an approach perspective?
Yeah, I think once they start throwing in pins as well, like I've seen a few where they've figure-eighted it and pinned it too, which is, you know, it can get quite extensive. I think the biggest thing here that you worry about with an athlete like Pappenhausen is the fact that the patella acts as a fulcrum. So, like, you know, effectively, when you're using your leg, that patella is taking a lot of shearing force, and shearing force is like force that's trying to pull that kneecap apart. Now, if you've got a fracture there, or you've got wires, or you've got, you know, pins in there, and you've got forces trying to pull it apart, that can get really quite uncomfortable. And I think the thing here is that moving forward, it is a really challenging rehab, to sort of get on top of and get your explosiveness back without too much ongoing pain. Now, not all, I say that, it's not all hope is lost kind of thing. Probably the most infamous patella fracture in the NRL, James Tedesco, early on his career, I think it was 2014, completely snapped it in two. We all know what James Tedesco has gone on to be. So it's not like I'm sitting here saying, you know, it can't be done. Look, it's just one of those injuries that has an added challenge aspect, just with, because, yeah, the whole leave the surgical, you know, stuff in. I think if any NBA fans out there, it was Kyrie Irving, I think, a couple of years ago, he had a similar sort of thing, was out 4 months after fracturing his kneecap, had the wire still in, tried to play through it, was getting heaps of pain, ended up needing to have another block where he went back in, got surgery to get the wires out, and then needed some time off again. So it's not so much that straightforward. It's just a little bit more complex, I think, which is something that people have to keep in mind.
Yeah, good summary there. I don't think there's anything else I'd want to add apart from that, but it's a really, really tough one. It can be. And like you said, the range of outcomes there is just so significant. So I guess for Ryan Papenhuyzen, who's faced a few injuries in his sort of short career to date, I hope it's not on that severe side and he can be potentially someone who's back later on in the year. So fingers crossed for him, mate. We might move sort of forward onto the Bulldogs versus Rabbitohs. Not too much to touch on in terms of in-game stuff here, with Josh Adakar probably having a glute concern, may not be expected to miss a huge amount of time. But the other ones that's probably of concern is Cameron Murray with a concussion. And we might speak to a lot of the Origin boys sort of with concussions out of that game as well from game three there.
Yeah, mate. So we've got Josh Adakar with the glute. Whether that's a strain or an actual contusion, so cork, we're not really sure. The mechanism wasn't shown. He did play on for a little bit. But, yeah, look, like I doubt it's going to be anything major. And, yeah, look, let's talk about the concussions. Yeah, don't want to go on too long about these, but I got heaps of questions about the three guys, Cam Murray, Lindsay Collins and so on, Cobbo, about, you know, yep, would they back up, all that kind of stuff. Just to make it clear, as soon as a player fails a HIA, that's a mandatory, it's a 6-stage process they have to go through with 24 hours per stage. So usually the earliest to return is day 6, which would have been like, yeah, Tuesday for Cam Murray and those kind of guys. So they just couldn't play this week. The one thing worth mentioning is Cobbo, I think Kevy has said, will be out this week coming as well, just with how nasty it all looked and stuff like that. Being young, I think they want to take it extra cautious with him. So he'll definitely be out this week as well. And then, yeah, the other guys, Cam Murray and stuff like that, we just got to wait and see how they progress through the week. But otherwise, yeah, I think that's the injuries for this week, mate.
Yeah, nice summary, Brian. So it's a fair bit to work through there as of the round 18 wrap. And I guess it's getting to that pointy end where you sort of worry about guys and getting wrapped in cotton wool towards the end of the year if you're sort of out of the finals race completely. So it'll be interesting to see how teams manage the roster over the next few weeks as the season sort of, well, dies off for some teams and heats up for other teams. So it'd be good to watch. It's always a good time of year, finals time with footy. Get around that for sure. So we'll go into the Patreon questions again, Brian. So patreon.com/NRLphysio if you want to get more content, more answers. If you want to just talk smack with Brian, you can mention how much more passionate you are about Origin than he is and how you bleed blue rather than maroon, even though he probably won't believe you. Brian, first question about Joey Manu. There was a lot of blow up on social media about whether he was faking an injury there to gain an advantage. Did you think that was dodgy?
Nah, mate. Look, I'm the first one to sort of, you know, stand on the side of players in terms of, you know, player safety and all that kind of stuff. He had a cork. Like you could, like, even if you thought that he faked it, like, the way that he ran afterwards, you could see he was limited in his stride on that leg. It was very, well, it was obvious to me anyway. I don't know whether that's the physio in me or what it is, but I think most people, if you looked at after the line break, like he was just very limited in his running. I don't know what he is meant to do in that kind of case in terms of like he felt a cramp, reached down for it, decided that it wasn't, you know, bad enough for him to, like, I've seen some people saying, oh, he needed to go down as soon as he reached for his calf. And I'm like, well, he felt a cramp, went, oh, yep, there it is. No, it's not bad enough. And just went, boom. Now, the Dragons guys actually advanced towards him. It's not like they stopped and totally gave up. They advanced towards him as he grabbed for his leg. So, I don't know. I just didn't think, like, seeing all this, is it the most unsportsmanlike thing ever? Like, it's happened in the game. And I was just like, what? Like, I know we got to blow up about something, but I didn't see the issue there at all. I think people saying, oh, now you can smash injured players and, you know, you can't say boo, the boy who cried wolf, all this kind of stuff.
it wasn't like he was lying on the ground or, you know, even took a knee or something like that. He was still standing. I personally would have no problem if he reached down for his leg, stood back up, and then someone hit him. Like, if he's still standing, if he's kind of, you know, leaving himself as an active player, then that's fine. I think if he's like, you know, he's taken a knee or he's lying on the ground, someone runs up and smashes him, I think that's probably taking it a little bit too far. But yeah, I just didn't see this as a big deal. Like, fair, yeah, he clearly had a cramp. He had a cramp, decided to push through it. No one to blame, but like, there was a bit of confusion there, but it's just not, not unsportsmanlike, in my opinion. What did you think, James? I'm sure you're similar.
No, I didn't. Well, as you'd well know, I don't believe in sportsmanship all that highly. I would revert to rub factor, to playing outside the rules with whatever you can. I just think at the end of the day, sportsmanship is vastly overrated in most contexts, and I think especially in a professional football context. You know, this isn't something where you have to sort of be the good bloke patrol. If someone's like looking a little bit injured, you don't have to take it easy. I think it's, you know, it's basically defend until proven otherwise, I think, in that situation. It's not like he put his hand up in the air or he took a knee down to say, yes, I'm definitely hurt. Or, you know, I can think of the instance that we spoke about off air about Tom Trbojevic when he did his hamstring and he sort of like hopped into the line and he sort of had his hand on his hammy, but he sort of gave himself up a little bit more than what Joey Manu did there. I didn't think he gave himself up in any way, shape or form. I thought it was just pretty poor defending. So in my opinion, I think that is just play on and see you later if you're not able to make that tackle on him. So I think there would have been a few fantasy football roster managers that were pretty happy to see him put up a big 190 points this week. And whether that's due to poor sportsmanship or not, I don't think you'll care too much, because I think you'll be happy to see the points on the board. But yeah, I completely agree with your take on that one. I think that sort of sportsmanship and this and that is very overrated as a conversation topic regardless. So that's Joey Manu in a nutshell there, mate. That was a good one to cover. The next one we have is about Tommy Trbojevic, friend of the show, whether he will be maybe back in time for Manly in the finals if they go deep. I guess with Tom, if you cast your mind back, he had obviously the shoulder surgery, and I wasn't aware if he had cuff repair as part of that or whether it was just a labral repair or more of a bony injury to, I guess, the glenoid there. I guess if we were sort of playing best case scenario there for Tom, what do you think the surgical approach and the length of time missing would be for him to maybe come back towards the end of the year or the World Cup?
Yes, there's a few rumours floating around, and then I think Joey John said something about it today that he could still be available for them in finals. I've spoken to Tommy on the show and know a few people sort of around the traps, and by what I've been told, it was a cartilage injury and a fracture. So if we're working off that, look, the fracture does complicate things a little bit. They're usually a little bit more conservative with how much they want guys to move their shoulder in those early phases. Best case scenario, if you've got just a straightforward labrum or cartilage tear, guys would come back in like 12 weeks, which is effectively 3 months. So the fracture being there probably, you know, puts a bit of a delay on that. It'll be 3.5 months from surgery date to the start of finals for Turbo. So theoretically, it is possible. I actually spoke to someone very in and around the Manly sort of setup, asking about Tom's potential availability for the World Cup more than the finals themselves, just to sort of see what the gauge was. And the indication was, I think the message I got back was, there's no guarantee that he'll play any games for Manly, so it will be tough to push for inclusion in the World Cup. But my way of, you know, reading between the lines there is the fact that they even mentioned, when I asked about the World Cup, sort of even mentioned that they were, you know, considering games for Manly as an option. I think there's a chance that he comes back for finals. The fracture's the thing that worries me that might just let him miss it, but it is definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I think even if, you know, they were talking, you know, included in the World Cup or not on the back of any games for Manly, if I'm Mal Meninga, I'm probably picking Tom Trbojevic as my right centre, just quietly. I think would fit into any Australian team if he's fit and ready to go, even off the back of zero NRL games. I probably wouldn't care that much. I think he's proven that he's one of the elite players in a game. He would be a straight selection for me, regardless of how many games of football he had played this year. He's a genuine superstar, he's in your team if he's available.
And all the other centres are left centres, like, you know, that have been tearing up. Like, Jackie Whiten plays left, Latrell plays left, Val Holmes plays left. Like, they're probably your big centres who you're looking to first. So all left centres, and then you've got Turbo who can play right. So, yeah, I'd be picking him if he's fit.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, I think. Tom's fit and the shoulder's good enough. And I think you make a good point about the fracture, whether that'll delay things or not. If it's a straight labral repair, you feel like 12 to 14 weeks would be achievable, but it depends on how long they will probably would want to immobilise him if they sort of had a bone injury to contend with there as well. So interesting, bit of a watch and wait. We might sort of see that news heat up as things progress a little bit further there. Next question we got on from Patron Brian is about the double ACL injuries from the Roosters. Obviously, there's lots of speculation into the reasons that might have happened. What are some of the myths that you can put to bed here about those injuries for the Roosters?
Yeah, I think this is a good discussion point into the multifactorial nature of any injuries, particularly in around ACL injuries. You know, whenever there's an ACL injury at Brookie, it's always, you know, it was the surface's fault. It's definitely the surface. And then for the Roosters now with so many injuries, it's definitely the training. They're loading them up too much. That's the problem. So I think, first of all, these injuries are just influenced by so many different things. Like, it's a big piece of pizza that has so many different slices to it. Like, it's the surface, it's the training load, it's the genetics, it's the past injury history, it's the weather conditions. It's, you know, there's just so much stuff that goes into it to be literally a perfect storm of, you know, factors that causes these ACL injuries. Now, the one thing that I think I do probably want to discuss is the training and how the Roosters have approached training. Now, I'm not sure if many people are aware, but the Roosters cleaned house with their training, performance staff leading into this season. So obviously they did, you know, want to freshen up, sort of think that potentially there was something that they were missing there. And I know I've spoken to a few people who were in and around, whether interviewing or stuff like that around that interview process. And there was a fair bit of emphasis on like ACL prevention programs and those kind of things. So there obviously was some focus on that. There is evidence for those people listening. There is evidence that there are programs out there that can reduce the risk of non-contact ACL injuries by up to sort of 60 to 70%. So there's some really good ACL injury programs out there. Now, whether it would be 60 to 70% in a competition like the NRL, I doubt it, because these guys are already doing some pretty high-level training in general, and some of these programs are not sort of tested out in those kind of environments as much, those to get that 60, 70% sort of figure. But there's good evidence for those training programs. So whether there was in the past, I think the big thing about these two happening again, like the Billy Smith one, I think is the big part of that pizza is the fact his past injury history, right? Like, it just leaves him completely susceptible. So like, looking at that one, I don't think you can put down to anything other than he was like at least a 30% chance of suffering another one. So it would take the best training in the world to, you know, somehow prevent that from happening, because it is quite a high risk. But the Tupanua one, look, it's just one of those things. ACLs just happen. I just look at it and I put it down to, you know, it's a contact sport, it's a change of direction sport. These things can occur. Now, as I said, there are training programs, and I think the Roosters are obviously sort of moving down that path of, you know, really trying to emphasize on that. And that is something that, you know, has proven to work in other sports and in the NRL. One myth that I want to debunk is training load. There's not much evidence at all that fatigue correlates with ACL injury. ACL injuries are power injuries. They're explosive injuries, that kind of thing. So there isn't a whole lot of evidence really at all that fatigue is a factor in these injuries. So I think that whole, oh, they got smashed in preseason, so that's why they're suffering ACL injuries, that is a total myth. If they get smashed in preseason too much, then they're more likely to suffer overuse strain injuries like hammies, calves, those kind of things. It does not increase their risk of ACL injury. So I think that that's probably the biggest one I want to debunk, because so many people are, oh, they train them too hard, all that kind of stuff. It's just not the case. The type of training is something that maybe they need to change, and they need to do more agility, landing, change of direction kind of stuff. But I think they've done that heading into this season. So I don't think, if it was a, you know, factor in the past, I don't think it's a factor now. What are your thoughts, mate? Anything I've missed there?
I think just the positional demands that are involved with those guys as well. I guess you're probably at a slightly higher risk if you're an outside back compared to a front row nut trucker, for example, where you're just north-south. So there's a few positional considerations, I think, with it. I think an interesting point when you talk to people and you look at some of the things around training load and training volume, it's very rarely just one off-season when they're looking at training load. So a lot of times when you look at someone's career, and particularly in when they're that formative sort of between sort of 18 and 20, where they're transitioning from like age group footy to senior footy to, you know, second grade to first grade, whatever they're playing, is they take a fairly broad snapshot of people's training loads over multiple years and what they need from that perspective. So I think when you take a one off season snapshot of someone's training load, it probably doesn't give you all the information that you sort of need there, I don't think. So I think sometimes taking a bit of a broader approach in terms of what training and, you know, how many games they've played over those, you know, previously 24 months and things like that, sometimes even longer than that, is what you need to consider as well, which I think is a useful thing. What do you think?
Yeah, mate, I completely agree. I think, I just think it's a very simplistic view to sort of sit there. Even with the club, the Roosters have suffered the most ACL injuries over the last 4 years in the NRL. I think it's very simplistic to point to one thing and be like, it's all their training. Like, you know, you could view... Well, the other thing is, I think, off the top of my head, I know at least two have been contact. So Lindsay Collins was contact, and, oh, there was another one that was contact too.
And Morris contact as well?
I can't remember. I
remember B. Moz was in contact there. I have a faint suspicion he was sort of... Stepping through a tackle, maybe?
I swear there was another one as well. But anyway, those contact ones, like, they're a write-off, but they still add to the, you know, to the stats of suffering the most ACL injuries and those kind of things. So, look, like, I think maybe, you know, the Roosters looked at it and go, maybe we can improve our, you know, injury prevention around the knee, and that's why they cleaned house over the off-season. But I'd find it shocking if they then brought in a team who are having exactly the same training problems, if there was any, as the last guys, and that's why these two have happened. I think these two have happened, you know, the Tupanua thing's just one of those ones that, unfortunately, the ball bounced back over his head. That was the perturbation. He needed to stop and try and change direction. And it just went. Could have happened to anyone. And the Billy Smith one, unfortunately, the past injury history just puts him at an increased risk, and it was just one of those things that happened. So I'm not sitting here sort of pointing at the Roosters going, I can't believe they train their guys too hard or anything like that, which seems to be the growing narrative around this.
It's interesting, isn't it? I think it's sometimes a cyclical phasic thing as well with injuries. I recall not that long ago that the Panthers had quite a high injury list, and then they've been relatively low for the last little bit of time. So I think it's a phasic thing. I think there's a lot of good fortune involved in that as well, despite the fact that they're getting the best sports science pretty much going in the country, aren't they, these guys? So they're getting...
I think the Panthers right actually... that's a really good example. I think the Panthers was training style, because I know there was a training group, that there was a high-performance group there who has then moved on. And things improved significantly, is what I've been told anyway. Like, I wasn't obviously involved with the Panthers or anything like that. But, yeah, I've been told that there was a, you know, a certain training method or, you know, philosophy or whatever.
Approach
there. It wasn't working. And then, yeah, they moved to a different team, and it's been a lot better since. And the Panthers have got one of the best injury records in the comp. So, yeah, it's not to say, like, a really good performance staff is very, very important and can be very, very successful, but it's quite rare for it to be the complete fault of the performance staff. Like, even in that Panthers example, it's not all the performance staff's fault. Like, Sam McKendry was responsible for, I think, three of the ACL injuries that time.
Yeah, he
because
really
he, that's right. It just, you know, he's got that history there. So, yeah, yeah, well, we better not talk about it too long. But yeah, that's sort of where my position right. on it.
I was going to say, watching the Latrell Mitchell doco, just get more hula hoops involved. I reckon that's probably the key for everything moving forward. That's my suggestion facetiously. Next topic, Brian. Let's move on from hula hoops. We're going to talk about serious knee injuries and how people get off the field. So a few times on the weekend, people weren't driven off on the Medicab. Could sort of getting carried off, like sort of semi-walking off the field, do more damage or more harm than good? What are your thoughts on that? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, look, like 99 times out of 100, walking off's not going to do much. It all comes down to pain. You know, how much pain are these guys in? Like, in terms of safety, majority of the time, if they're being helped off with two guys under their arm, they're not going to be putting enough pressure on it to really, you know, cause any issues, especially in the likes of the two ACL injuries. Like, the damage is already done, right? Like, you're not gonna tear a meniscus, or, you know, because the ACL's already torn. So it's like are we gonna cause a meniscus tear or a fracture or something like that just by walking off? The answer's no. I think the one, you know, that it does raise interesting things is Pappenhausen this afternoon, because he had that suspected patella fracture. You know, walking off, if he's trying to sort of put weight down through that and say it is an unstable fracture but not quite complete, potentially contraction of that quad could have caused, you know, further fracturing to occur. It's very unlikely, but there is some risk there. Now, potentially they just sort of went, yeah, like it's completely gone, there's not much we can do. And players, it's the pride thing, right? Like, if players can walk off, or not walk off, but, you know, not have to be cabbed off, they don't want to be cabbed off. You talk to any player, they want to come off sort of relatively as much under their own power as possible. So that's a factor as well. But yeah, it more comes down to pain and comfort for the player. And often, you know, the medico might say, do you want the cart? And they'll go, you know, shit no. Like, I'm going off with you. Yeah. Like, they don't want to go off on the cart. That's just, and as I said, it's not a damage thing. It's more a pain thing. 99 times out of 100. It's more about, you know, do we need the cart because this person's in way too much pain to get off the field.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's an obviously significant injury that needs to be sort of addressed, or sort of someone needs to be immobilized in a certain way for that to happen,
yeah,
as well. So,
like,
yeah, good shout there with that.
Significant fractures like your Gerard Yaoyis, knee dislocations, Slade Griffin a couple of years ago, those kind of ones. Like, those guys need to be immobilized and, like, off the field. So they're always going to be, but like an ACL or a, you know, those kind of things, they don't need to be immobilized. They can still move. We've seen guys play on after ACL injuries. So, yeah, it's majority of the time, it's not really a concern.
Last question, Brian, was about Ruben Garrick and his performance. How do you think he looked the week just gone?
Yeah, mate, I did a real deep dive into Garrick, looking at hit pointers in general. Tedesco had one last year, just looking at Supercoach, you know, scoring and stuff like that after a hit pointer, because a few people were talking about, like, either buying Garrick or even selling him. I had a few people sort of sending me questions saying, look, I'm thinking about selling him as a bit of a point of difference. Look, I once again, it's over on Patreon if you want to read the whole thing. Jump on there. So I won't go too in-depth into it, just to keep it for those patrons. But yeah, hit pointers tend to be, majority of the time, they look bad. So in other words, they look quite restricted. But once they get warm, they're not, like, the pain can sort of settle, especially if it's, you know, and Garrick had sort of the week off to let it settle. So he looked pretty hampered in that first half hour. But once you get, you know, moving, once it gets warmer, that kind of stuff, by the, like, you know, he just looked fine by the end of the game. Now, how long is he going to be without the kicking? Look, Daly Cherry Evans is a really capable, you know, supplement to that. So they could potentially keep it with him and let Garrick sort of get over the Cork completely, which might take 2 to 3 weeks or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if sooner rather than later he's back kicking and back looking pretty normal, because, yeah, hit pointers in general, just they seem to look worse than they actually affect the performance.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he missed too many more games with the King Boots. He looked pretty good the other night. I think he put up a 120-odd points, so he was scoring points lux, so I don't think it'll be something that I'll be moving him out. I'm pretty happy having him in there and in the centre wing spot for all formats of Supercoach, hey?
Mate, now that you bring up Supercoach, over to our Supercoach corner. Who have you picked for us this week for our player of focus?
Yeah, I've gone back to the Queensland spirit, Brian. I've got to talk about Kalyn Ponga just because one of how good he played in the Origin game the other night. I thought that was the best game of footy I've seen him play in his whole career. And he was really probably the straw that stirred the drink there for the Queensland boys in a lot of aspects with him and Ben Hunt playing probably his best game in an Origin jersey as well. But about Kalyn Ponga, so we'll talk about him from a Supercoach point of view. He's priced in at about 500 grand and he's averaging in low 50s there. And historically he averages, I think his last 3 years, it's been 68, 80, 68. And he's got the goal kicking boots back again, which is always good for him in terms of his average. Softer draw towards the end of the year. And I think if you cut your mind back, he had a low-grade MCL injury early in the year. Then he's had two concussion-affected scores in there, and he's missed a couple of weeks in terms of the Knights games with those concussions as well. And I think the other thing I thought about Kalyn Ponga was there's always the contract stuff early in the year and the distractions with that, and there was a lot of chop and changing with the spine of the Newcastle Knights team. So my thinking is probably, in terms of my plans for this week, would be looking at probably bringing Kalyn in instead of Will Kennedy at fullback, or maybe go Harry Grant in and maybe go sideways Kennedy to Pong would probably what I want to do. But I think for him at 500 grand, I think his ceiling is very, very high, as we're sort of seeing with, you know, those Latrell Mitchell sort of type players. If you've got a fullback that's got the goal kicking boots in a reasonably soft draw coming up, I think he's got an ability to score well and truly above low 50s, which is what he's doing currently. So I think you could probably look at Kalyn as having a 3 round and a 5 round average that would be sort of nudging the 70s sort of mark. I think that wouldn't be out of the question for me whatsoever. What do you reckon in terms of your plans this week, Brian?
Yeah, mate. Well, I'm getting low on trades. I scored well again this week. I'm ranked pretty well, I think, somewhere in the top 100 and scored, 1460 or so this week. So a nice little mover and shaker. Hopefully go up a couple of spots this week. I'll have to replace Papenhuyzen and I'm down to, I think, 3 or 4 trades, something like that. Don't have many. At least replace him. Harry Grant, I'm looking to get in, but he's probably another one. I mean, you mentioned his performance earlier. He was just a bit limited with that cork. He's kind of probably one of those guys I want to almost see him do it before I waste one of my very few trades on getting him in, because I've got Cam McInnes and Reece Robson there doing a fairly good job. Anyway, so it's probably replacing Pappy. I think I'll just go to Latrell because he's probably the most obvious. Kalyn's a really good option if you need cash, but I've got, you know, I think 500 or 600 grand sitting in the bank, so I don't really need that cash all that much. So, yeah, I think replacing Pappy with Latrell, and then whether I go Grant, I'm probably leaning towards not doing it this week and waiting till he does anything. That's sort of where I'm at the moment, mate.
Yeah, nice one. I think it's just the run home now. Everyone's probably got a stomping team, so it's more just probably having an up your sleeve if you get the odd injury here or there that's going to sort of cost you one of those bigger scorers, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, mate. That's right. So, look, guys, usually we transition to our player player interview this week. This week we are going to skip the player interview because we knew today would be a very, very long one. I don't really have too many look behind the curtain. I don't have too many interviews lined up over the next couple of weeks. I do have a really, really good one coming next week, all going well, with Casey Badger, one of the female referees. You would think ref being a ref not all that injury I guess frequent, but Casey has a fantastic story in terms of pushing through. You talk about footy players pushing through injuries, what Casey's pushed through in her career. She's obviously already up against it being a female referee or one of the first female referees, and then dealing with all those injuries too. So hopefully we'll get her on next week. But that's about it for this week, James. I mean, we've covered a lot. This is probably one of our longest ones that you and I have wrapped the injuries this week, so it's still quite a lengthy one. So hopefully you guys have stuck with us well and enjoyed sort of the insights that we've given on those guys. Look, if you like the pod, give us a review or recommend to a friend, subscribe, all that usual stuff. We really, really appreciate it. But other than that, mate, have a good week. Hopefully next week's a bit of a shorter pod, because this week it was quite intense, hey.
Yeah, lengthy one this week, so hopefully for the next weeks it's a little bit shorter there, hey?
Absolutely, mate. All right, guys. Well, enjoy your weeks, and we'll talk to you all, hopefully, with less injuries to talk about next week.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.